Ladies and gentlemen, the 2018 Conference and Convention of the California Council of the Blind is now in session. We're beginning with a shout out to our sponsors and hello to ACB Radio. We're thrilled to have the listening public throughout the world with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to first thank our wonderful sponsors. At the investor level of $5,000, we have Uber. At the sustainer sponsor level at $3,000, we have Three Energy Upgrade California. Sprint. No, we actually have four. Vanda Pharmaceuticals. And Wells Fargo. At the contributor sponsorship level of $1,000, we have Rosen, Bean, Galvin, and Grunfeld. Yay! And at the supporter level of $500, we have the American River Parkway Foundation. Friends of the convention include in-kind donations from Cordova Community Council, the Folsom Cordova Community Council Partnership, the Cordova Church of Christ, Rancho Cordova Grocery Outlet. Thank you to them. And please be sure to visit the following activities: the Uber Annual Banquet, International Luncheon, the Sprint Registration and Volunteer Booth, Technology Luncheon, and the Vanda Pharmaceuticals Education Breakout, the Leadership Dinner, Women's Breakfast, and the Wells Fargo. We had a terrific financial literacy workshop, the live streaming, and the Energy Upgrade California, the Fellowship River Walk, the Dog Quiet Room, and the Relief Area, and the GSGDHI Luncheon. Thank you to our sponsors. Now it gives me great pleasure to introduce our treasurer, Peter Pardini, who will give the invocation.
Thank you, Judy. Can we please bow our heads? Heavenly Father, we come today and throughout this weekend asking for your guidance, wisdom, and support as we begin our conference and convention of the California Council of the Blind. Help us to engage in meaningful discussions, allow us to grow closer as a group, and nature the bounds of community. Fill us with your grace, Lord God, as we make decisions that affect our members and the lives of blind and visually impaired citizens of California, and continue to remind us that we do here today and throughout our convention, all that we accomplish is for the pursuit of truth and the greater glory to you, our Heavenly Father, and to the service of humanity. We ask these things in your name. Amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, where's my microphone? Oh, thank you. Will you stand, please, for the presentation of the colors from the Cordova High School JROTC under the leadership of their teacher, Phil, I've lost your last name, McGreedy. So thank you, young men, and please rise.
Ready, halt. set colors. Order color. This mouth color. Present arms. Order arms. Form color guard. Form arch.
Off mic so you know where the head table is, and the flag is, I believe, to my right. Is that correct? So
yes.
The flag is up here on the right, and our friend who's going to be with us, working with us on financial matters, Louis Fawcett, is going to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. So, Louis, if you come over here to the mic.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I love these patriotic dogs. Okay. What? Ladies and gentlemen, what a thrill it is for us to be here in Rancho Cordova. And the city has welcomed us and been incredibly hospitable. They have given us a proclamation. And we are now going to hear from the mayor of Rancho Cordova, Linda Budge. Welcome, Linda, and thank you. We'll postpone the greetings from the mayor, and we will go on to our nominations committee report. We have several people who have missed this convention who are in poor health. Pam Pology, who is the chair of our credentials and nominations committee. Our own Kathy Skivers, who has been seriously ill with pneumonia. Our board member, Gail Crossan, who is in the hospital awaiting surgery and is facing serious health issues, and anybody else that I haven't, I'm not aware of, our prayers and thoughts go out to you today. And now the gentleman who stepped in at the last minute, he's always my right-hand man, to be the chair of the Nominations and Credentials Committee, First Vice President Frank Welty.
Good afternoon, everyone. The CCB nominating committee had our meeting yesterday, and I want to tell you what I told them at the end of the meeting, that I thought it was the most orderly and most fun nominating committee I've ever attended. It was very well done. The nominees, as selected by the nominating committee for offices, are as follows. Keep in mind that anyone is free to run for offices from the floor, but here are the nominees. President, Judy Wilkinson. First Vice President Gabe Griffith. Treasurer Lisa Presley Thomas. And directors Frank Welty, Charlene Ornelas, Penny Valdovinos, and Rob Turner.
Thank you, Frank, for that report. Thank you so much. And now, you didn't hear all the nice things I said about you. The Rancho Cordova, again, has welcomed us and been so hospitable and has given us a proclamation from the city. And here to welcome us today is the mayor of Rancho Cordova. I blanked on your name, Linda Budge.
Judy, thank you so much. It is an incredible pleasure for all of us here in Rancho Cordova to welcome you to our town, to have you decide to bring this wonderful organization to Rancho Cordova. We have been so impressed. We are impressed by your mission, what you've been trying to do for the blind and low vision community for almost 85 years now. The ability to live and work and function in the community, just like everybody else, maintains the most incredible quality of life. But we've also been impressed by the activities that your organization is doing this week. The idea of inviting all of us in to have dinner with you to experience what it's like. The marvelous art exhibit that you have over at our Mill Station Arts and Cultural Center has really brought a different dimension to an art center that we could not have envisioned. And what it's done is to help the whole community understand and realize that you all are here today. It's not like, you know, somebody showed up at this hotel and had a conference and they went away. It's given us an opportunity to actually participate. And then the fact that you have all these volunteers coming to help you all experience the American River Parkway, which, of course, for those of you who are from another part of California, wouldn't know that it is absolutely, it is always called the jewel of the region. It is one of the treasures of our area, and it is known worldwide. So we are enjoying having you here this week. We hope you'll come back again, and to entreat you to come back in another year, I have brought a key to the city.
Oh.
And I'm going to hand it to Judy.
Thank you so much, and we'll be back next year.
Well, we appreciate that. I took it out of its box. It has a beautiful box that it comes in, but I wanted you to be able to experience the key. I can describe to you that it is quite large, and it will open any door you can find, and it has the city seal on it.
Thank you.
So,
do I give it back to you now and it goes back to home, or do I get to keep
it? No, you get to keep it. You get to keep it. I'm just going to put it back in
its
box. And thank you all very much. I know you'll have a good time today. Please enjoy the American River Parkway, and we'll look forward to seeing you in another year.
Thank you. So, it's almost time for door prizes. But before we do door prizes, we are going to hear from one of our sponsors. And this is a generous sponsor this is the second year that Wells Fargo has sponsored us. And though we lent her to Washington for a few years, we're thrilled to have Kathleen Martinez back, a senior vice president of Wells Fargo, and here to speak with us for a few minutes is Kathleen. Welcome her. Oh, good. The mic to my right. Do you want to sit?
I can move the mic.
Move
the mic.
Move the mic. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Give it to her.
All right. So where do you want me? Do you want me to give you all the keys?
Yes, please.
I'll do that. Thank you. You guys take care.
Thank you. Hi, everybody.
Well, thank you for allowing me just to say a few words. I'll be very brief, but I want to say on behalf of Wells Fargo, we're happy to sponsor this conference for the second year in a row, and I want to acknowledge my colleague. I don't know if she's in the room. Denise, are you here?
I'm here.
Oh, yay. Well, we have a colleague and her husband, Lovey. I learned that's his new name. His real name is David. It's Ted Clark, sorry. Anyway, I wanted to acknowledge Denise because she's been an amazing partner. And I want to just talk about a few successes that we've had in the last few years. So remember, Wells Fargo is a bank of 270,000 people. So we're large. And we were run for a very long time like a federated group of states. So now we're centralizing. And one of the areas that we're centralizing is the area of accessibility, both internally and externally. So that has happened, and we opened in the very end of 2017 what we're calling our Enterprise Accessibility Program Office. So, and I'm leading that effort, but there's many people at Wells Fargo that are interested in a more accessible bank, that are interested in hiring people with disabilities. For those of you, I don't know if you got in your bags our flyer. We are very interested in hiring you if you are interested in working for us. We have expanded our recruitment capability for people with disabilities, so we will be at more conferences and reaching out more in a more targeted way. I want to talk to you a little bit about our philanthropic work, which Denise is a big part of. She actually works for the our philanthropy team. One of the things that we're doing is like I said, Wells Fargo was a federated group of states. So that means that, everybody had their own way of doing things, right? So we're kind of developing a strategy for funding disability work or work in the disability community. In that regard, there's an initiative I want you all to know about, and that's our People with Disabilities Scholarship Program. We're in our second year in a row. We usually announce the winners for National Disability Employment Awareness Month. But I want to, if you are interested in being on the list, because we give $250,000 in scholarships per year, please email me, and I want you guys to have this email address, not only for scholarships, but if there's issues that you're facing around accessibility. I've had lots of conversations with people about things we can do better, and we are really interested in hearing from you, because it's the only way we're going to improve and make changes. So in addition to the scholarship, and in addition to, our work in making our products and services more accessible, and our work internally to make our internal operations more accessible to our employees, I want you to use my address to be in touch either about the scholarships or if you're having issues. Somebody was talking about an issue they were experiencing with an ATM. I'm talking to somebody else about some issues that we can improve on with our website. And we're very open, and we have a team of people that really care. It's a great group of people. That work on accessibility at Wells Fargo in all departments, in our EIT department, our HR department. Our Enterprise Accessibility Program Office is guided by this team of subject matter experts. So my email is kathleen.martinez@wellsfargo.com. Kathleen is with a K. And I'm very happy to be here and have a fabulous conference. Thank you very much.
So I got you on early, so yeah.
Thank you, Kmart. We're thrilled to have you with us.
That's my nickname. That's
truly my nickname. Yeah. I spilled the beans. What can I say? Do we have the capability of doing a door prize right now? Are there door prize people in the room? Peter, you're supposed to get the door prize people in here.
I'll get Peter. I think he's handling right now.
Who's that? Is it?
It's Nicole.
No, we need just you or somebody to read a door prize. We need two door prizes, the $25 and one of the gift baskets, and you need to bring the hat in to draw a name. Can you do that? Okay, how long will you need? 2 minutes? A second? Okay. No, you can't have 5 minutes. Hurry up. But in the meantime, a little birdie has whispered in my ear that today is Bonnie Rennie's birthday. Bonnie, are you in the room? Well, happy birthday. And we won't sing, but happy birthday. Come to the talent room tonight and we'll sing happy birthday to Bonnie. The hospitality suite, remember, is open every evening, and we have so many wonderful things going on. Okay, we're a little bit ahead of schedule, but we are going to have a couple of door prizes as soon as Nicole can get back here with the goods. And once again, I just want to give a shout out to all of our friends who are listening to us on ACB Radio. And that gives me a chance to thank our streaming team, Gabe Griffith and his crew of streamers and I'm going to forget somebody, but I know there's Rob, there's John Glass back there, there's Ken. There's Dan Kaiser Rob Turner. Got it. Thank you. The next thing that's going to be coming up, so you know, wake up, is going to be my report, and I don't want to get started on it without having a door prize to keep you in the room. Well, I sent out the Pony Express to bring in earlier, and somehow the Pony Express didn't seem to. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we'll have to put off the door prize. I hate to keep you in suspense. I didn't mean to make you stay in the room for my speech before you got the door prize, but that's the way we're going to do it. Okay. Now, I just want to remind people that a lot of people may not be in the room. They could be listening from their own rooms, right? I used to do this, listen in my hotel room to the convention. You know, never mind going sitting on the floor. But one time, I got to tell you, are you back? Let me just say, one time, I was a delegate, and there was an issue about the guide dog, our guide dog issues. I was sitting in the tub having a leisurely bath, not down here on the floor on a Sunday morning, and I, over my little Bluetooth speaker, I heard, and resolution, you know, about the guide dogs. And I thought, holy, you know what, I got to get down there. So I jumped out of that tub and threw on my clothes and made it down to the floor just in time to, you know, cast my vote. So there we go. Now Nicole is here with $25 in cash. From whom, Nicole?
From CCB Fresno chapter.
CCB Fresno! And I want to remind you that my name is in that box, so let's get Frank to pick a name. Go down there and get Frank to pick a name, Nicole. He's not here. Oh, he left. You go ahead and pick one, Lewis. Pick a name. Where? I thought it was here. Remember, this is Nicole's first convention, and we.
She didn't hear that. Well, being ahead of schedule is fast evaporating. What can I say? Poor Nicole. Hey, Nicole. We just reminded everybody that this is your first convention. Are you having a good time?
Oh, yes.
Hey. I'll draw the first name.
Okay.
I'll draw.
It's a wine glass, a big one.
Ooh, look at this wine glass with all these names in it. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, Vita Zavali is not here. Okay. Put it back.
Put it back.
Yep. And we'll draw again. She's coming tonight. She's coming tonight. Somebody would put Welty. Lynn Coates. Is she in the room? Hey, good. And we have one more door prize. Did we bring one of the baskets? Did you? Okay, the Starbucks tumbler. What's in the Starbucks tumbler and a gift card?
It's a T-shirt
and the coffee mug. That's right. It's a Dining in the Dark. This is from Bakersfield chapter. So let's, Lewis, you draw.
Okay.
And you read.
Wendy Lindsay.
Wendy Lindsay. Nope. Draw again. Put the name back, though.
Cheryl Duran.
Cheryl Duran? Nope. I think she's with the city.
Katrina McCurdy.
Katrina McCurdy. Yay! Is Katrina in the room? Katrina. No, we have to draw again. Is she here? She's, oh, good. We see you, Katrina. Okay. Okay. Did we find her? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let me get settled. Let me get my Braille device. Gosh, I can't be, it's amazing to me that I was speaking to you last year, 6 months into my term, and now it's 3 months before the end of my first term. One day, I was giving a lecture on the serialization of Victorian novels. You know, they were put in magazines, you know, like Netflix today, you know, does all that. So one of my students, I was giving this lecture and I'd prepared a handout, and a student raised a hand and said, "Miss Wilkinson, is serialized spelled C-E-R-E-L-I-C-E-D?" And I said, well, here's a teaching moment, right, that everybody, including teachers who should know better, make mistakes. And what we learn to do is benefit from our mistakes and go on and do things that we learn from our mistakes. And so that's my way of sort of saying to you, we've made some mistakes. It's happened before. It'll happen again. The difficulty is we don't have a lot of time to turn our council ship around. So some of the mistakes, you know, seem more difficult than others. But you know what? We've got some strategies in place. So I just want to get across the message that, you know, I don't lie to you. And you know, I do my very best to tell you the truth and to be transparent. So I'm going to begin by talking with you about, frankly, some of the things we could have done differently, and now we're learning, and we will do them differently. We lost an employee last year, and it takes a lot of time once you've trained someone to train somebody new. And so we lost a fair, you know, amount of time working on that replacement. We were also desperate for a track record, and we knew we should go after grants. And because Paul had already received two VISTA grants, we went after a VISTA grant. Well, by gosh, we got it. But we had 2 weeks to hire in early September. It's very difficult to find people, even who have good hearts, who can work for $1,000 a month, and especially since we needed people who could do fairly skilled things. And so we had about 2 weeks to not only put out job descriptions once we got the grant, but to hire. And so Karen Schroeder from our Capital Chapter, who works for the Department of Rehabilitation, does a lot of employment stuff, joined Nicole and Paul to hire our three Vistas. And it all went south for various reasons. One Vista had some social issues that didn't become apparent till some time had gone by. Another had some health issues. Our visually impaired Vista, who wouldn't mind us saying so, found commuting very difficult and was able to get somewhere. He's newly blinded, by the way. This was his first job, and he discovered that he could find some work working from home. So we lost all of our Vistas, and while technically something might still happen, we're not going to invest any more time in that project. We're just going to move on. But that involved a lot of our time, not only training these folks, which Paul spent a lot of time doing, and you participated, a number of you participated in those trainings, but we also spent time, once the employees were on board, day-to-day managing them, and that took some time too. So, as I say, hindsight, that didn't work out so well. We also made an application for the older individuals for the blind grant through the Department of Rehabilitation. We thought we had some good communications programs, some good transportation programs to offer. That was over a 500-page grant. We didn't get that grant. It was an incredible amount of effort. Our Canes Across California, which was a lot of fun and raised a lot of local awareness, and a lot of chapters worked very hard, we didn't bring in much money. And that really helped us to see that grants are not the way to go when you don't have very much time. When you need to shift the focus of the organization quickly, grants are difficult because you need a lot of time to build those relationships. So we've shifted our focus, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in a few minutes, but we don't give up. We're moving to new strategies. But I want to now emphasize the good things that have happened in the past year. She isn't in the room at the moment, but bringing Nicole Pacheco on board last May 1st was a wonderful thing, and we're thrilled to have her. Our Bylaws and Constitution Committee has spent countless hundreds of hours working on revisions to our bylaws, and we'll be dealing with those tomorrow afternoon. And I want to give a shout out to our Bylaws Committee. We've had legal successes. Just Monday, we were able to have a press release with RBG&G. The law firm has contributed $1,000 to this convention for a settlement in our San Mateo vote by mail case. So we've worked well with that county. They will now be able to provide vote by mail information so that people can use their screen readers, or they can go to a library to use a machine there. But people will be able to vote privately and independently using their own systems. That's a real victory. Thanks to the efforts of our heroic legislative team led by Jeff and Margie Donovan, we sunset the guide dog board. And many, many guide dog, Golden State guide dog handlers went to Sacramento and worked on that bill. We're thrilled to have sunset the guide dog board. And you'll hear much more about our legislative efforts from Jeff when he gives his report this evening. Now to some boring nuts and bolts, but that are incredibly necessary as regarding our documents and policies. Paul has spent an incredible amount of research time trying to find our incorporation papers. And he got them from the Secretary of State, something like over 100 pages. And we just realized that a lot of things had been put in our updated papers that are confusing. So sometime over the next, I don't know how long, but we're going to be working on cleaning up our documents so that the mission statement and the documents is in sync with our mission statement and so that we get on board properly. Nothing is out of order, but we just know in our own minds that these documents need cleaning up. We also created the case for support last year. Remember, I didn't know what a case for support was. And it's the case for why people should support us. Just that simple. And Paul worked with a team, but mainly dug out. We didn't know what we'd done. We didn't know how much money we'd raised. We didn't know what bills we'd passed. We had to do a lot of digging and research just to figure out how much scholarship money have we given? How many hours of volunteers have we done? So the case for support, which we will be greatly expanding and revising in the next couple of months, and I'll say more about that later, that case for support was created, and that was a huge step forward because we were able to present that document, and it's on our website if you would be able to see it there. And speaking of our website, one of our biggest successes this year is the revised website, and we thank our webmaster, Erlene Hughes, and our incredible technical operations group, our TOG. Let's hear it for the TOG. We've put a number of policies in place, a gift acceptance policy, and an employee handbook. We're working on general accepted accounting practices. That's coming up right away. We need to get that in place so they can be more responsible for our financial dealings. The scholarship committee worked incredibly hard under the leadership of Christy Kressman, our scholarship chair. Let's hear it for that committee. And they got their calendar to work, and we've gotten our scholarship application online this year for the first time. And we also have our CCB survey online. And that is really a huge potential for resources because the survey asks a lot of questions, including what skills do you have? What would you like to see the organization do? You know, what do we still need to work on? So we still don't have a lot of people having filled that out, but I'm just going to say it again and again. Please go to that survey online and fill it out and so that we know what our resources are from our own members. We have incredible resource potential. We're also working on Zoom Cloud Meeting, which is going to let us eventually have non-echoey phone meetings, you know, and where people don't get bumped off. Thanks to Rob Turner and Paul Patchy and Nicole, we're going to be working on that Zoom Cloud Meeting so we can have decent recorded and expanded technology for our meetings. They aren't here with us today, but many of you will remember our friends from On the Move, Patrick Netter and company. They send us their best wishes. They are at a conference in Southern California meeting with all kinds of manufacturers to see who is going to manufacture the little seated mini treadmill, which is still on our radar. They're behind schedule. They're still developing their prototype. They thought they would be in business a lot sooner. They're behind schedule, but they sent us, Patrick just wrote me Sunday wishing us good wishes for our convention. And so we hope in the future that relationship will develop, and we have every trust that it will. Our convention sponsors are up by 50%. from 10,000 to 15,000 this year. We are so proud of our sponsors and so thankful for them. Registration is up from, we had 118 registered. We have 143 pre-registered. We're not sure how many walk-up registrations we have from yesterday and today, but already you see we're up by convention registration. Yes. We had an incredible dining in the dark experience last night. And that is going to, we're going to grow this event. We are going to bring in more large donors. We had Christine Ha, Master Chef Season 3 Chef. She was so down to earth and so kind to us and so generous. And the menu that she produced was wonderful. And the auction raised some money for us. And so we haven't got any final figures and won't have for a while. But we are thrilled that we had such a classy event last night. And Paul and Nicole did an incredible amount of work for that. Let's hear it for Dining in the Dark. And you're going to hear a lot more about Major Gifts Ramp Up. This is the campaign for increasing our large donors so we can get some unencumbered funds, meaning money that we can spend the way we want to spend it on the projects that are dear to our hearts by making those projects dear to big donors' hearts. And you're going to hear about that in a few minutes when Louis Fawcett, who's working with us on this campaign, is out here. He's been visiting our convention. I'll introduce in a minute, but he'll be speaking with us in just a few minutes, and you'll hear a lot more about this campaign. And we've had a huge number increase in our volunteer hours. And I know we nagged you so much about the volunteer hours, but look how it's paid off. In 2016, we estimated that we had $952,000 in volunteer hour money at $23.54 an hour. This year, that was 2016. You want to know what it was in 2017? Guess. More than a million. $1.4 million in volunteer hours. At the level of $24.14 an hour. And this is what speaks to our donors, that our volunteers are willing to give of their time in so much in-kind volunteer hours. Give yourselves a hand because you're the volunteers. Okay, there are other areas where we need to improve. We need better communications. We know this. I've got my presidential messages going out every month. We now have, at the request of the Southern California chapters that I had the pleasure of visiting with in late January, there's now a Southern California office under the management of our own Ken Metz. So you now have a phone number. It's in the Blind Californian. It's in the connection. You'll be able to call Ken, and if you can't get through to our office in Sacramento, call Ken. He'll let the office know that you're trying to reach them. It'll be another way for you to be able to know that your messages are getting through. And we are going to work hard on getting back to you sooner. I know we've said this, and we're going to keep saying till it's true. We know we don't always get back to you in a timely manner. That's not right. We're going to make it right. We want to strengthen our chapters. One-third of our chapters are not here. Some of them are local and, frankly, could have gotten here at not too much expense. I'm very sad about that. Again, interesting number of a third. Probably a third of our chapters are incredibly healthy and doing amazing projects and amazing works and are incredibly active. A third are, shall we say, in the middle, somewhat struggling. another third are barely active. We got to change that, and we will. We're definitely going to work on membership growth, and that's going to be, again, part of what we're going to bring in some money for is to grow our membership. Money makes money and makes members, and we're going to be doing that. Yay! Yes! We are already planning for next year's convention, which will be at this hotel. It'll be our 85th anniversary. We already know that Kim Charlson, president of ACB, will be our guest next year. And she's bringing the first dude with her, Brian. And as I say, we'll be here at this hotel. We are going to do some more work on convention reviews to review our possible future projects. And I'll say a little bit about that more tomorrow morning's board meeting. And by the way, I want to thank so many of you. I know you have to eat somewhere, but I'm so glad so many of you are coming to eat breakfast with us at tomorrow's board meeting. We look forward to having you. Okay, now don't go to sleep. It's time for the thank yous. Well, I get to work every day with one of the most inspiring, visionary people I've ever met, Paul Shane. It is easy being Paul's boss. And I am on behalf of your board. Paul reports to me. Nicole is learning. She is learning so fast. Do you realize in the last month, she's had to do things like do all the input for the chapters and affiliates to the AMMS database. She has had to prepare for convention. That means, you know, running to get the Braille copies, getting the program, getting the print input of the program. She has answered the phone. She's registered people. She has just been sterling, just sterling. We could, yay, that's how, yes. And where did all those volunteer hours come from? They came from your hardworking board. I can't say enough about your board. They are a terrific group of 15 people. Let's hear it for your board. And your incredible committees, scholarship, publications, crisis, intervention, and lots of other committees, bylaws. Thank you so much to our committees. Let's hear it for our committees. And last but not least, I need to thank my husband, Steve. I can't yell at you, so I yell at Steve. Without Steve, who contributes dozens and hundreds of hours in his own right to this organization, as chair of the Advocacy Committee, as a hardworking member of the Bylaws Committee, the Governmental Affairs Committee, and I run so many ideas by Steve. I want to thank you, sweetie. Ladies and gentlemen, let me conclude by saying that if you reelect me to serve you, I promise to work even harder to ensure that CC moves toward its 100th anniversary. Thank you so much. Okay, now I got to go back to my agenda. Hang on. Okay. Getting there. Getting there. Friday. Okay, here's Friday. So, do we have any of our sponsors in the room? Okay. Yeah, no, I meant that hadn't spoken yet. I'm sorry. Thank you, Wells Fargo, again. Okay, so what we're going to do at this time is have an update from the Braille and Talking Book Library. And we have with us our dear good friend, Mike Marlin, who tells me he's just celebrated last October his 10th anniversary. I can't believe it. So, Mike, you're on.
Thank you, Judy. Oh, am I on?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Okay,
yeah,
there we go.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's been 10 years, too. It's gone by so fast. So thank you, Judy. Thank you, CCB. You guys are wonderful, and I appreciate all the great things you do. And what I'd like to do is, I think, what do I have, about 15 minutes, Judy, or less than that?
A little more.
A little more? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I also have Vivaldi with me. He's our canine librarian. I work with the American Library Association. He works with the American Labrador Association.
The Labrador Association.
We have the Intellectual Freedom Manual. He has authored the Gastrointestinal Freedom Manual. Okay, enough jokes for now. I wanted to give an update. I was thankful and was fortunate to speak earlier at the CLUA, Kahlua meeting, and thanks Bonnie and all. And I tried to give, break my subject matter into three topics. I'm going to do the same. I won't wax as long as I did there, but I'll try to summarize some of the things that I think are important. And then if there's time, I'm happy to take any questions. I don't know how your agenda is set.
We should be able to allow you some questions.
So first I want to talk about technological innovations, then I'll talk a little bit about library services, and finish up with some advocacy information for you all, and hope that you'll join me in those efforts. Okay, so first, as far as technological innovations, there are a lot of things on the table and in process and research within the National Library Service for the Blind. Some of you probably know about some of these. And there have been a lot of questions for example, when will NLS be able to circulate refreshable Braille displays? We had some excitement about the Orbit 20 reader, which is being tested by some libraries, and there have been some issues, some technological challenges. And so what NLS is planning to do next year in 2019 is to put out a request for proposal for any producer of a Braille reader, whether it be Orbit or anyone else for that matter, with the hopes that a solid product will be forthcoming that is inexpensive enough so that NLS can begin, hopefully in 2019, according to NLS Director Karen Canninger, a pilot for interested patrons, and probably in a few, maybe six different network libraries spread around the country, which is how NLS does these pilot projects. So hopefully there will be some candidates and a pilot begun sometime in 2019 with the hopes of getting something into circulation. Because as many of you know, the legislation was updated within Library of Congress by Congress to allow for distribution of other types of playback devices, not just audiobook machines. So look for that down the road, and thank you for your patience. Karen is a prolific Braille reader and a champion of Braille, and very much wants this to happen. Another technology innovation that is somewhere down the road, probably a little further out than the Braille display, is the next generation talking book machine. And I know undoubtedly some of you are curious about that. And one of the, first of all, I'll just say that the current talking book machine, which has been very robust, has been around for about 10 years now, believe it or not, which NLS rolled out in 2008, 2009, there was one single purchase of 500,000 machines for the network, and then that's it. So luckily, the percentage of repairs needed is minimal compared to the cassette players or the A1 players, for those of you people who've been around. And so that's been a good thing. But there are some limitations, and with the next generation machine, assuming that these machines last a few more years, which we're pretty confident that they will, there have been some minor battery issues some of you may know about, but they're still going strong. The next generation machine, a couple of components that need to happen are wireless delivery being one. And for a lot of people who are not are either not technologically savvy for whatever legitimate reasons, or don't have the wherewithal to purchase lots of these great nifty gadgets that many of us have, to be able to deliver to them in a much quicker fashion through broadband. And so NLS is working with the Federal Communications Commission right now to put that into development and figure out how, so that down the road, a reader advisor can simply click or press enter and get a book out to someone and have it be delivered within moments. So that is part of the research that's happening at NLS. And the other major aspect of the next generation machine will be text-to-speech engine for all kinds of reasons, so that people can read probably those, not so much the recreational reading novels and such, but more technical documents, government documents, bylaws, you know, all those fun things to read, things that you can get off the web and that you could play back on your machine. So that is also very much being researched and being looked at, and the hope is that within the next several years, unfortunately I can't give an exact date, but the original prognosis was when it was rolled out in 2016, this idea for a new machine was within 5 to 7 years. So hopefully not in the not too distant future. And one thing I didn't mention earlier at Kahlua, which is another enticing idea, although the funding might be a challenge, and that is, for example, in the UK, some of you may have heard of the In Your Pocket project, which is a voice-activated device that would allow you, kind of like Amazon's Echo or Alexa, but it uses both broadband and cellular, and is a device that is being provided by the Royal National Institute of the Blind, which is a charitable organization, to many of our counterparts in Britain for their reading. And there's a great demo. If you Google In Your Pocket, there's a video and audio demo of how it works. And you know, Karen Kenninger was over there recently looking at it, and I don't know that will be achievable, but I know that Karen is very forward-thinking and always looking at what's the next best way to get as much content to as many people in and as easy a manner as possible. So that's some technology stuff. Library services. I want to mention a couple of things. One that's going on now that is fueled by the insatiable and voracious readership of people like you and all around the country, but especially here in California, is the desire to get books quickly once they're published, and of course, how to get them, how to access them quickly without always having to go through the postal service. So the Postal Service is great, I want to say, even though there are issues. You know, the free matter subsidy has been around since 1931. It's a wonderful thing, and it's really important, especially to people who rely on getting hard copies of books and magazines. Let's see, where was I going? Oh. So what both California has two regional libraries, and in Northern California, as some of you know, we have San Francisco and Fresno, which are sub-regional libraries. Yes?
Yay.
Run by great people, four great people. And when the Northern and Regional Library is about to join the Southern Regional Library Braille Institute in the patron-centric cartridge program. And some of you may be familiar with this, but if not, what this is working with our integrated library system vendor, we have managed to have them update our software so that we can put multiple books onto a customized cartridge for an individual patron and mail that cartridge out to that person with probably a 2 or 3 month loan period if they need it, with an average of perhaps 10 books at a time. And the reason why this is so vital right now is because there is a huge assortment of retrospective books that are barred only or download only. And, you know, NLS spent the last several years converting, analog to digitally converting, a lot of those RSC recorded cassette titles, like I say, over 50,000 titles. But they didn't have the funding to produce cartridge copies, which makes sense. So, but the libraries can do so. And one of the things that NLS has done and is hoping to do again soon, pending funding, is to provide libraries with blank cartridges. So we now have several thousand peach cartridges with translucent containers, as compared to the white cartridges and blue containers that come from NLS. And we're able to use those for projects such as patron-centric. So we're getting ready. We've gotten just about all the wrinkles ironed out, and we've been getting advice from Braille Institute Library, who has been doing this since 2015. And we're going to do a soft launch, a pilot. We're not going to probably advertise it just yet because we can't afford to produce 10,000 cartridges just yet, which is how many patrons we have. But we'll certainly, you've heard about it now, and so stay tuned. Look at through our Facebook page, through our web page, through our outreach and advisory council, and we'll try to get the word out for people who are interested. We have a couple candidates in mind who are people who are not barred users and who like to listen to the cassettes. And of course, the cassettes are only going to last so much longer. I keep trying to convince my staff that, okay, the cassette era is over. Let's toss out all those cassettes and cassette machines. And they say, oh, no. We still have, and we do. We still have, we're still circulating about 2,500 cassettes a month. And we have hundreds of people who have both machines and are still listening to them. But we really need to transition because we don't have any parts to repair them anymore. And some of the cassettes are breaking. And NLS has now converted, digitally converted. So look for the beginning of the PCC era, the patron-centric cartridge era, from the Northern California Regional, and contact Braille Institute if you're interested in experimenting and utilizing it down there. Another service provision I want to tell you about is the descriptive video service that we have. We have been buying about 50, 60, 70 titles per year, and we now have over 500 movies available, thanks to the ACB DVS project for helping us find titles and for information. One of the things that a lot of you know is that with the commercial movies, it's a language track on a DVD. It's not the most accessible way, unfortunately. The hope is that DVD players and this computer software, such as Windows Media Player, et cetera, are going to make it easier to be able to utilize that language track. But it's not like the old video cassettes where you pop them in and the DVS track starts right up. But I want to encourage people, and the reason is because we have not been getting as much usage. Part of the problem is that it's we've had an additional application for people to who want the service, kind of like BARD is an additional application to the basic library service. And we're looking at disbanding that whole extra hoop so that people can get signed up for DVDs better and easier. So look for that. One other service to tell you about is Bookshare. And some of you I know in the room probably are signed up with us, but we were able to get funding from the Institute for Museum and Library Services, which is a federal agency, and they gave us a grant to do a 2-year pilot for Bookshare. We've got 325 seats this year, seat licenses. We're going to have 500 in the second year through August, the end of August of 2019. And we have maybe about 280 of the 325 seats filled. So we still have some spots, and that goes for all four network libraries. If you are someone who, for either for fiscal reasons or for whatever reason want to take advantage of it, waiving the $50 fee, annual fee from Bookshare, contact us and we'll get you set up. And just remember that these books are not live narration. This is electronic Braille and electronic text-to-speech audio or DAISY MP3 audio, which can be played on the digital talking book machine or a number of different devices. We're also working with the Internet Archive to help them with competent authorizations so that they, because they have scanned books and they're working on converting them to EPUB, and they're going, what this means is that they're going to be a million additional books available to people who are able to download them and listen to them on either DAISY online player or EPUB format once this authorization regime gets figured out. So that's another exciting thing. We're trying to expand. Me being a reader and knowing some of the challenges, we want to make as many opportunities for reading and for to make books available to as many people with print disabilities as possible. And how am I doing on time, Judy?
You're good.
Okay. So I'll quickly cover the last topic, and that is advocacy. And I know if Jeff Tom is in the room, Jeff's been working with us for library funding, but I'll just, I'll talk about that real quickly, and then I want to talk about the Marrakesh Treaty.
Good.
So in terms of library funding, I mentioned the Institute for Museum and Library Services, which is a federal agency. Through the Library Service and Technology Act, grant funds are provided to libraries all over the country, including California, and for a variety of reasons, our library, as well as Braille Institute, relies heavily on these grant fundings through LSTA. Last year, for the first time ever, the current administration proposed a zeroing out of all federal library funding. Boo hiss. and that included the Innovative Approaches to Literacy program, which is part of the grant package, as well as funding for several network libraries within the NLS network, including ours, the National Library of Medicine, Title I funding through the Every School Succeeds Act, which helps fund school librarians, which, there's all kinds of research out there about how kids succeed when there's a school librarian in a school, and that's been very much challenged over the last few years. So I just, however, some of you may have heard that Congress had come up with a bill to fund the government for fiscal 2018 earlier today, both House and Senate, and I just heard during the meeting, during lunch actually, that it was signed by the president. So what a relief. So we're good till October. this president has also proposed complete elimination of federal library funding for 2019. So back to the drawing board. As I mentioned, I work with the American Library Association. We have we would love to have people in the blind community write to their legislators, especially now where there's a process called Dear Appropriator letters, which are members of the House and then members of the Senate, send letters to their respective members on the Appropriations Committees. So, Dear Appropriator, please include, this is why library funding is so important. And, the NLS, the print disability community, really, it would be really helpful if people contacted their legislators. There's a page that on the American Library Association website, which is ala.org/advocacy/fundlibraries. So, and I can, I think Bonnie will have that, and you can always email me. I'll give you my email before I wrap up here. So it would be the Senate Dear Appropriator Letter campaign has just started, and I think those letters are due by April 13th. So it's a quick two-week period. The House appropriations, dear appropriator letter, that just ended. We got about 130 or so letters, which is about what we got last year, and that's all good. Last year we got about 67 senators, so that was really good too. So that's federal funding, and as I mentioned, it does affect our bottom line because we rely heavily on those funds given the state of the general fund within the California state government. Now, on to the Marrakesh Treaty. I'm hoping and assuming that most of you in the room are aware of this treaty that was signed in 2013 as part of the World Intellectual Property Organization within the United Nations that will allow for cross-border sharing of books and magazines in alternate formats across borders for any country that has copyright exception law, including, and of course we here in the United States do. 36 countries, the treaty went into effect in 2016 because 20 countries ratified it. Now we're up to 36, including several English-speaking countries such as Canada, Australia, New Zealand, not yet the U.S. However, the Marrakesh Treaty was tied up in the Judiciary and Foreign Relations Committees in the U.S. Senate for the last year, as negotiations were ongoing between publishers, you know, the rights holders, the blind community represented by both major consumer groups, as well as the library community and what's called the Library Copyright Alliance. And an agreement was finally hammered out, and March 15th, so what is that now? 8 days ago, it was introduced into the full U.S. Senate. And so this is very exciting. Both the ranking members as well as the chairs of those two committees, which includes Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, co-sponsored the treaty. Three additional senators as well, including Kamala Harris of California. So both of our senators have co-sponsored this legislation. And there will be a hearing in April in the full Senate to hopefully ratify the treaty. You cannot ever predict what the U.S. Senate will do on any day or hour. But please, if you would, contact at least for those of you in California, contact your senators, thank them, tell them why it's so important. Remember that not only would it allow the U.S. to share books and in both electronic braille and, any alternate format across borders with other English-speaking, of which there are 60 English-speaking countries around the world, but it would also allow us to import alternate formats in other languages. And we have a very pretty solid patron base that includes Russian speakers, Chinese, Tagalog, Arabic, Spanish, French, and many other languages. And as some of you know, there are foreign language materials within NLS. Most of them are on cassette. Only a few of them have actually been converted digitally, and most of them are outdated and at least 15, 20, 20, 30 years old. So this would allow us both for native foreign language speakers as well as ESL folks throughout California and throughout the country, of course, for us to be able to provide the books to them. And it would be, think about it, I mean, we have 100,000 plus books available through NLS, through Bard. We have 600,000 through Bookshare right now, and you know we could be talking about millions of books to counteract the book famine, as it's so aptly called by the World Blind Union. So keep your fingers crossed. Thank your senators. If you know people in other states, have them contact their senators. Tell your stories about as a blind or visually impaired or print disabled person, how important this treaty would be to get it passed. So we shall see. And I think that's it.
We've got time for one or two questions, and I think, Lewis, are you out there with the mic? So if somebody.
While Lewis is doing that, can I just say one more quick thing?
Yes, sure.
We have an advisory council, and I want to recognize Warren Cushman, who represents CCB on the council.
Yes.
And also that we're always looking for new members. So btbl.ca.gov, and there's a link to the Patron Advisory Council page, so if you're interested. Thank you.
And give your email to Mike.
Oh, my email is mike.marlin, so mike.marlin, at library, hopefully I don't need to spell that, library.ca.gov, mike.marlin@library.ca.gov.
And we can take one or two quick questions. Does anybody have a question for Mike?
Yes, I do. Judy, this is Olivia Ostergaard from Fresno Chapter, and I'm really interested in how do you get a book that has been published that you wrote on Talking Book. I have a book that's been out for 4 years now, and I contacted them a year or so out, and I've not heard a word. How do we go about doing this? Because I really want to do this. It's also an EPUB as well.
You contacted us, or you talked to Fresno?
Somebody told me to contact NLS back east, and I contacted them, and I never got a response.
Oh, okay. If you can email me, I'll follow up with that.
Okay.
Sometimes, I mean, there are different ways, you know, when it comes to the whole concept of collection development. I know Susan Glass here represents the Western region on the NLS Collection Development Committee. You can always provide suggestions to her or to our staff at the Talking Book Library. And as far as if you've written something, I'll just say this is on the down low because it hasn't happened yet, but we are very hopeful to have our start up our recording studio again in the very near future and being able to create digital books with about California topics and by California authors. So contact us as well. We generally, self-published, we can certainly look at those. We are have a little more scrutiny for those just because. But if they've been reviewed, then by all means, they're fair game. So, and I will follow up with NLS. But please, my memory isn't what it used to be. So please email me.
One more question.
I do. I have a question. This is Natalie. When you were talking about getting rid of certain players, I have the digital player, not the four-track one. Are you eventually going to get rid of the digital player? I started back using Talking Books a year and a half ago on the new players.
Oh, the digital Talking Book machines are going to be around for a long time.
Oh, thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
No, it was the cassette, the C1 cassette players, the big yellow players that are more and more obsolete as every day goes by. That's what I was talking about.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a big round of applause to Mike Marlin. Also, there were obviously people talking to Vivaldi out there, too. So. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Judy. Thanks, everyone.
Okay. You have heard me say this term, major gifts ramp up, several times. Your board, at the end of December, unanimously voted to invite a cooperation and integration and work with an organization called National Association of Nonprofit Organizations and Executives to work with us on a major gift campaign, major donor gift campaign. And our team leader is Louis Fawcett. And he has been with us since yesterday afternoon. He was at Dining in the Dark last night. He has been my captive all morning and walking around with me and talking with me about our organization. He's seen our convention, was in the exhibit hall, and walked in on some of the meetings, was at one of our luncheons. So he's being steeped in the CCB culture. And with that kind of information, he will be able to really help us design our major gifts campaign. But I wanted him to have a chance to visit with you to explain what we're going to be doing so that you understand what it is and how it works. And with that, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Louis Fawcett.
Thank you, Judy. And I want to bring all of you greetings from South Carolina. For some reason, people think I have an accent. I, I don't know why you think I do, but I am from South Carolina, and I love visiting California. Of course, you have a beautiful state, especially the wine region. And so Judy and I are already making plans to go visit some of our favorite wineries. So it's just an honor to be here with you. I wanted to share with you a little bit about my background so that you know my heart, and then talk about the Major Gifts Ramp Up model for fundraising. I grew up in Virginia. I have 3 degrees and served for 11 years as a Lutheran pastor in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Florida. And my problem is that I'm not very patient. And so in church work, it requires a lot of patience. And I love church work, I love church folks, but I got too impatient, and so I moved over into the nonprofit world because then I was able to help people and also move forward at a very fast pace in that work. So I started out working for an international adoption agency, helping kids in China, Russia, and Ethiopia. And in 2008, at the height of the Great Recession, we raised $1 million to build a children's home in Ethiopia. And then I went to work after the earthquake in Haiti. I went to work for an organization there helping with school children and children with special needs in Haiti. We had 3 schools, an orphanage, and 5 feeding programs. So I raised money all over the United States for that work there. And then I spent 4 years working for an educational institution in South Carolina called Adventure. We had after-school programs for kids, literacy programs, and the largest children's museum in the Southeast. And now it's my honor to go around the country and work with organizations like California Council of the Blind to build capacity to further your mission so that your work with blind and low vision folks in California can go deeper and more broadly than you've ever gone before. I have really enjoyed being with you for the last 24 hours, and I'm looking forward to more time with you in the months to come. I want to let you know that you have inspired me very much. I 24 hours ago, I hadn't met any of you in person. I've talked extensively over the phone with Paul and Judy, but had not met you all before. And being here with you and being immersed in your community has been very inspiring. And the reason I say that is because part of what we're going to be doing over the next 12 to 14 months is bringing on other people who may not know anything about California Council of the Blind, but who have capacity to help. And in the same way that you have inspired me, I'm sure that you will inspire others as well. So the Major Gifts Ramp Up model is 27 years in the making. We have used it to work with over 480 organizations to raise over $900 million. You may know that corporations and foundations are great sources of funding, but you may not know that 80% of philanthropy in the United States comes from individuals and family foundations. The precise breakdown is 72% from individuals and then another 8% from family foundations, which are, controlled by 1 or 2 people. So the focus of our work, while we will include corporations and foundations in this work, the focus will be on individual households. So we will be working through the 13 steps in this model, and I want to go through those for you now, and then we'll have time for questions after this. So the first step in the model is called management philosophy, And it is simply this. The organization making donors a priority in your mission. Most nonprofits in the U.S. spend so much time serving clients, which is wonderful work, and they're so passionate about their programs and their services and their advocacy, that they forget that donors are part of their mission too. So in the same way that California Council of the Blind serves its members and all of the folks in California who are blind or have low vision, there also needs to be a shift to serve your donors because you're helping them as well. You're helping them achieve their goals for their communities in California. So that is the first step in the model, and your board has already helped to make that shift to including donors as part of your mission and your focus, and that shift helps you put more of a time priority on donors. The second step in the model is major gifts, and it is prioritizing major gifts. And when I say use the term major gift, that's different for each organization, but for our purposes, a major gift will be anything $10,000 and higher. You know, we live in a world where people think they can raise money on social media or at banquets or golf tournaments or 5K runs or whatever kind of event or outing they can come up with. And while those things do raise money in the short term, they end up being a lot of work for not that much money, and they don't form long-term relationships with donors. The approach that we're going to use, on the other hand, is an approach that listens to donors. It is focused on their needs and goals for their communities, and then we figure out how we can help them achieve their goals through their gift. Chapter 3 is organizational development, and that's when we look at the resources that an organization has on hand, the time and the talents. We look at the staff resources, the board resources, and we determine who are the key folks who are going to be involved in this major gifts campaign. Then we spend a lot of time on Chapter 4, Case for Support. I know that you've already done some work on Case for Support. We're going to continue to take a look at how you have framed your argument. And here's the goal. It is for California Council of the Blind to be able to describe your mission in 60 seconds or fewer and use that as an opportunity then to go deeper with donors. So once you get them interested in a very succinct, short description of your work, then you also will have a wealth of material to also share with folks along the way. The Case for Support looks at your nearly 85 years of history of working in California. It celebrates that and describes that work. It also has key testimonies about the work of CCB. But the Case for Support also lays out a 3-year budget for all of the operational costs that are needed over the next 3 years and all of the one-time project expenses. All of this is laid out in a very clear, compelling, concise document that can be used for you as members, but also for the donors with whom we'll be interacting. Chapter 5 is the 18-month advancement calendar. So one of the first things that I will do with Paul and Judy and some members of the board is we'll lay out the next 18 months of all the things that have to happen in order to raise the money we need to raise. And so at this point, you can see that when we go to donors with a Case for Support document that describes your history as well as the new projects that are coming down the road, when we go to them with a 3-year budget, and when we go to them with an 18-month calendar that is a fundraising plan, this inspires donors. It gives them confidence, and it also gives them inspiration to support your work. Chapter 6 is prospect identification. We use a product called DonorScope, and it interfaces with Experian, the credit reporting agency. And through DonorScope, we have the names and addresses of all of the millionaires in the United States. And so we will use this product called DonorScope. We'll define a geographic area on which we want to draw from, and that will help us identify prospects to give to California Council of the Blind. Then we will work together to have a non-fundraising awareness event. This is Chapter 7. The non-fundraising awareness event is where we will gather millionaires, we will gather prominent members of the community, we will gather members of CCB into a luncheon that typically happens on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. And this will be about an hour and 15 minutes to inspire people about the work of CCB. It will not be for fundraising. We will not be making an ask that day other than this. At the end of that event, we'll ask one thing. We will say to everyone there that if you have been inspired by what you've heard today, we would like the opportunity to visit with you personally. Now, if you're a numbers person, I'll tell you how the numbers will go. And these numbers bear out over and over again in every campaign that we do. We will compile a list of roughly 2,500 households. We'll invite those folks to this non-fundraising awareness event. Out of those 2,500 households, we will get about 125 households to that event. Out of those 125 households, we will identify roughly 80 of them to whom we can make an ask for CCB. And out of those 80 households, we will get 40 to 50 yeses for CCB. And those 40 to 50 yeses will make up the entirety of the campaign. So all of the work that we're going to be doing over the next 14 to 16 months is really going to focus on about 40 to 50, mainly families, but some corporations and foundations, who will fund your work for the next 3 years. After the non-fundraising awareness event, which happens at about the six-month mark, so this for you all will be late October, early November. We will then visit with the folks who attended that event. We'll listen to them first and foremost to hear about their concerns, about their goals for their community, and then we will help them see how CCB helps them achieve their goals. Then Chapter 9, we'll have a signature event, which works out perfectly to do what we did last night, dining in the dark. And so we will work on doing that again next spring, and we'll bring in more dollars through that event. We will work together to, this is Chapter 10, to seat a campaign cabinet. The campaign cabinet is made up of 15 prominent individuals who will be involved in asking for major gifts to the campaign. Then we will conduct campaign interviews, which is simply the process of getting to know those donors, visiting with them in their place of business or their homes to listen to them. That's Chapter 11. And then Chapter 12 is making an ask of those donors. We'll ask them to contribute to the operational needs of CCB and then the one-time project or capital needs of CCB over the next 3 years. And these will be multi-year commitments that people will make over a 3, 4, or 5-year period. And then Chapter 13 is campaign success, where we celebrate the success of this campaign and all of the impact that we're going to be making in California. And then we begin to look into the future once again, at the work that is to come. I will let you, if you're curious about success rate, I'll go ahead and tell you that the success rate is roughly a third, a third, a third. So there are a third of organizations who are never able to get going with major gifts ramp up for one reason or another. Then there are a third of organizations who have raised more money than they've ever raised in the past, but they don't get to campaign goal. The reason they don't get to campaign goal is because they get caught up somewhere in the model. They relax. They take their foot off the gas pedal, and they don't follow up with all the donors with whom they've been connected. And then there are a third of organizations who work all the way through the model, and they meet or exceed their goal simply because they followed the model as it is presented. They just did the hard work that needs to be done. There's nothing magical about fundraising. It is simply doing the work that is before us. I, again, will tell you that I was inspired by your work last night. I know that others will be inspired. And the reason I know this is because I was intending to come to this event and spend time with you all simply to observe and simply to get ready for this campaign. But I was inspired last night, and I made a gift. Your auctioneer inspired me to give $100. Which I know is not a lot of money, but here's my point. I don't have anyone that I'm to whom I'm immediately connected who's blind or has low vision. I haven't experienced in the past what I experienced over the last 24 hours, but I was inspired. And if you can inspire me, then I know good and well you will be able to inspire 40 to 50 families who will make a difference for CCB. So with that, I'm happy. I think we have a few minutes. I'm happy to answer some questions. Nicole is going to bring the microphone to you.
Thank you very much for speaking about this. My name is David. I'm from San Francisco chapter. I wanted to ask you more about how you researched your demographics, and will it just be here in the state, or will it be throughout the country?
It will primarily be in California, although there may be people from other parts of the country who are connected with someone in California who is blind or has low vision. But for the most part, it will be here in California. I'll be working with Paul and Judy and the board to determine that geography. So that will be from the DonorScope file, from the Experian database that we have of all the millionaires. But we will also look at other prominent boards like the United Way, hospital foundations, community foundations, and we'll invite some of those folks to the non-fundraising awareness event. And we'll also be just looking for natural connections that we already have. You know, some of your exhibitors that I met this morning, for instance, will have some important connections for us in California. Some of the artists that you all have met over the last couple of days will have some important connections. So we'll be drawing on all of our network of support in California to come up with a list of invitees to the non-fundraising awareness event.
Louis, can I, will somebody turn on my mic? Can I just add here? Basically, David, we're going to work first in the Sacramento area because that's where our offices are based. That's where Paul has most of his connections, and that's where we're gonna start. But here's the key: once we do this, once you know, go through this 18-month cycle, get this major funding cycle through, then we can go to anywhere else in the state we want and replicate the whole thing again. We'll know how to do it, so it'll be self-fulfilling. Does that make sense? Is that okay, Louis? Did I say that right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. More questions?
Okay. Hi, it's Karen Schroeder. I just have two quick questions that I've heard from different people locally. One is about the donors that we're talking about. How do we find out what donors' goals are? And what in the world do the donors want to accomplish by donating? And then the other question is, have you worked with an organization like ours that actually encompasses an entire state?
Thank you. Okay, so one of the ways we figure out what donors have in their as part of their goals and their portfolio of giving is they show up for the non-fundraising awareness event. So they self-qualify. We send them an engaging invitation that talks about CCB and your work. We invite them to this luncheon, and they show up. So already we know that we're on their radar screen. But in addition to that, we'll be listening. Listening is the most underrated part of fundraising, and it is the most important part of fundraising. So we ask a lot of questions about, and we do a lot of research about, you know, to what organizations have they given in the past? You know, do they have someone in their life that is blind or low vision? And so it's through research and listening that we determine their goals. Now, in terms of working with statewide organizations, absolutely. We work with some national organizations. We work with different organizations that are regional or statewide. I'm working with two Habitat for Humanity affiliates right now. I'm working with a national organization that is helping kids overseas get medical care here in the United States. And so we work with organizations of all sizes and all different geographic territories.
Hello, this is Albert Contreras. I just want to say here that last night, without realizing it, I met Lewis, and he gave me a little bit of a hand when it came to taking a picture, and just his overall personableness, I just got a really great feeling from him. And I just want to say to you, Lewis, I am glad you're working with us. I just have such a great feeling about you, and I just want to thank you for your little bit of help that you gave me. Thank you.
Thank you, Albert.
I'm just going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, we're waiting for our Uber representative, Austin Hayworth, is stuck in traffic downtown. And we're also waiting for Leslie to come in from Vanda. So so these people are coming in, but until then, we've got time for questions.
Yeah, we're going to get to the side of the room.
I heard artists.
Yep.
No.
Yeah, there's one over here on the other side.
All right, if our volunteer knows who was first, Artis will get to you.
Hi, my name is Lisa Presley Thomas. I'm familiar with the model that you just explained. I have maybe a two-part question. I've seen various portfolio givings in the past, direct IRA contributions, just straight hard cash. These donors that you're pursuing, what type of funds would they be providing? Is it just a direct cash to our organization, or is it through other asset avenues?
Thank you for asking. Yes, it's a mix. You're exactly right. So for operational commitments, we'll ask them to make a three-year commitment that is usually a cash commitment. For one-time capital costs or special projects, those tend to be larger gifts that may come in the form of a multi-year commitment, cash commitment, but it also may come in the form of appreciated stock or from the sale of real estate or business. And then we'll also include estate planning as well. So it may be that people choose to give from their estate or from life insurance, make commitments in that way. So we look at the whole range of giving opportunities there.
Question over here. This is Bonnie. Two questions. Are these people accustomed to or accepting of the fact that you got their names from Experian? It just seems a little different to us low-income people that would be okay with them. And the other unrelated one is, how is this informational lunch paid for? That's a lot of money to buy people lunch. Thanks.
Thank you for asking those two things. So the Experian list is all publicly available data. It's just compiled by Experian. So it is information that we could find in other places if we wanted to, but it just happens to be conveniently compiled for us through DonorScope interfacing with Experian. Very similar to other things you may get in the mail from real estate agents or from other folks who are sending mail to you wanting your business. Obviously, the return on simply the DonorScope file, the return on that list is low, but we don't need many people from that list to come. Just a few make a big difference. Now, in terms of the lunch, the lunch is very simple. I just did a lunch for Habitat for Humanity. We had boxed lunches from Jimmy John's and iced tea. So, you know, we this is not a fancy lunch. We're not trying to impress people with food. We will work with the venue, with the restaurant, with sponsors, and we'll either get the event underwritten or we will get it at a very low cost. So in terms of the cost of the luncheon, you know, as a ballpark figure, you can think about, you know, $15 per person total, times 150 people, help me out on the math. What is that, $2,250? Ish. Thank you, $2,500-ish for lunch. But we'll try to get that underwritten by a sponsor. Okay, the mic's coming around.
Okay.
Here we go, right here.
Maureen, Bayview Chapter. Thank you for your presentation. My question is this, or maybe it's more a comment than a question, but I'm really wondering, as we're moving into this cycle, it is a balancing act. I can see in some areas where it really enhances our mission to do this because it makes us think very concisely and very specifically about who we are and what we're doing, and that cannot hurt, as I see it. On the other hand, I'm wondering how easy it will be to actually get sidetracked from our actual grassroots work and mission, and how much overall resource time and staff time and the president's time, the board's time, is going to be spent with this whole project.
Thank you so much. And that is an important question, and we handle that in Chapter 3, Organizational Development, where we look at the staff resources you have on hand, and then we look into the future 2 or 3 years and see what additional resources may need to be added. But we do work with what you already have, and we grow that. Okay, yeah, here we go. Is that Beth?
Yeah.
Oh, Beth.
Hi, I met you this morning. My question is that the name of your organization ends in association. Does that mean that you are a nonprofit?
Thank you. So I wear two hats. Only two. Sometimes it's more than that because I also have children I am serving as president of the National Association of Nonprofit Organizations and Executives. We are a nonprofit, and we're working to transform the nonprofit industry. But that is on a macro level. On a micro level, I am senior counselor with Development Systems International. And so our work with CCB is done through Development Systems International. So I know it can be a little confusing in that I wear these two hats at the same time. But there's my work on the national level with NANO, but my work on the micro level with organizations, I work with roughly 4 to 5 organizations at a time on these campaigns, and that is the focus.
Thank you. We have time. We have about 5 more minutes for questions.
Ted Clark, 2 questions, and I don't know if the first one you're ready to share yet. What is the goal that we're looking to raise? And then also, it would seem to me that there would be more millionaires in the Bay Area and LA opposed to Sacramento. I know you said we wanted to target Sacramento because this is where the office is, but I mean, just to me, there would be more millionaires in the Bay Area opposed to here.
Let me just answer that. We were very skeptical when we were at the presentation in November, and we made the presenter look up Sacramento just for the fun of it. And he found like something like 100,000 people in the Sacramento area who had not only were millionaires, but who had homes worth $1 million. So we just said, you know what? Surely we can find, and we will be sending out invitations to about 2,500 people. So, you know, we'll move to the Bay Area. We'll move to Los Angeles, but we're just going to start in Sacramento where we got plenty of millionaires.
Yeah, and then to answer your, thank you, Judy, for that. And then to answer your question about the overall campaign goal, what that number is, we haven't determined that yet because we've got to look at what your total operational needs are for the next 3 years, your capital needs over the next 3 years in one-time projects. So it will be a couple of more months before I have that figure for you. But I can tell you this. We don't want you working hard today to pay for yesterday. We want you to not have to worry about paying the bills, to have money in the bank so that you can look into the future and continue to grow your mission. So that's where we're headed.
Yes. I can't think of a better place to end, can you? Thank you so much, Lewis. It has been a pleasure to spend the day with you. And Lewis will be with us. We're going to go around to a couple of the meetings, the 4:15 meetings. And let me just mention now that the bylaws committee, if any of you have got some concerns about the bylaws that we'll be working with tomorrow, the bylaws committee is having a special meeting this afternoon. There's the first timers meeting. There's the transportation meeting. I think there's one more. Oh, the guide dog walk. And it's a beautiful day, not like yesterday. So the guide dog, where are the guide dog walk people meeting?
Santa Rosa,
which is the guide dog. That's great. Now, it gives me, thank you again, Lewis. Let's give Lewis another hand. Now it gives me a great deal of pleasure. Our top sponsor this year, our sustaining sponsor, is Uber. They have given us, yes, yes, yes. And Uber has given us $2,500 in cash and $2,500 in transportation subsidies. And so that has just been a wonderful gift. And Austin, I want to let you know that this event is being streamed throughout the world. So we have people listening to us on ACB Radio. I know you might not have heard that before, but the room may not be totally full, but we got the world out there waiting to listen to you. So with that, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Austin Hayworth from Uber.
Thank you, Judy, for that very nice introduction. It's a pleasure to be with you guys this afternoon, and thank you for having me.
We understand you got caught in traffic.
I was. Uber, even if somebody's driving you, it's not even through traffic. There's actually some protests going on downtown right now, that was part of it. But as Judy mentioned, we're very proud to be a sponsor of the California Council for the Blind. This is kind of a new partnership for us, but I had a fantastic time last night. I got to have dinner with my girlfriend and Ken Metz back there and my new friend Pam Hill, and it was just a wonderful experience, and we really had a great time. So I think this whole organization is doing great stuff, and to the extent that Uber has been sort of a resource for this community, I want to talk a little bit about that, but it sounds like you guys also may have some questions. I know that folks in all communities sometimes have frustrating experiences with Uber, but I can assure you that we are always trying to improve. That's something about technology companies, is that there's always opportunities to get better and learn from experiences and try to make tweaks, and you know, getting feedback from communities about what those can be is something we take super seriously. So we'll get to that in a minute. But first off, Uber is using technology to make transportation accessible and reliable for riders who are blind and low vision. Like any technologies I mentioned, there's always room for improvement there. The Uber app was built to expand access to accountable and reliable transportation options for all, including riders with visual impairments and other disabilities. We are committed to continue to build solutions and support everyone's ability to easily move around their communities. And we've done that through partnerships with organizations like the National Federation for the Blind, the Lighthouse for the Blind in in San Francisco. And we're dedicated to seeking feedback. We're dedicated to seeking feedback from these communities, and we're happy to add this organization to the list. We have service now in 78 countries and over 600 cities around the world. And Uber is enabling people in the blind and low vision community to find more independence in their commutes to work while they run daily errands or visiting loved ones. According to Mike May, who's actually an advocate for the blind and visually impaired community and one of our technology consultants who I've gotten to work with, was quoted as saying, Uber is the single best advancement for the mobility of blind people in the past decade. And Mike has used Uber in 5 countries and 10 cities around the world, including with his service dog, Tank. And as a technologist and a blind rider, his insights have proven invaluable to the Uber product team as they change and adapt the product to try to make it more accessible and easier to use with less, you know, missed trips or problems I'm sure all of you guys have experienced if you happen to be an Uber or Lyft rider. So I'll talk a little bit about some of the benefits of Uber and some of those product innovations that hopefully I think some of you folks are already familiar with. But voiceover through iOS or Android and talkback technology.
Yeah.
I know some of you I got to connect with last night have been using that, and as I mentioned, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that because it's always something that we can improve upon through our partners at Apple and some of the other cell phone providers. Cashless payments I know is something that is a really big solution for a lot of folks, including myself. I don't like carrying around cash anymore, so the fact that you can pay seamlessly with a credit card is something that we think is definitely a resource for folks. And then real-time tracking, the fact that you know and you can share with the loved one in the app where you are at all times and know where you are, it is definitely a resource to a lot of folks. And equal access for all, the fact that the way our technology works, unlike some transportation options in the past, there is no discriminatory dispatch or anything like that in the way riders and drivers are matched out in the world. We basically try to find the most efficient way to connect somebody who's wanting to provide a ride with folks who need a ride. And then, as close as that can be. And so hopefully that is something that you guys are experiencing if you're using the product. And the ability to, as I mentioned, share your ETA and location with your loved ones, with your coworkers or whomever, so that you can kind of more efficiently plan around your transportation, around your day. And so I can talk more about that if you guys are interested.
Yeah.
Some other products that I think are exciting, I think Ken mentioned that he's an Uber Eats user. It's something that we launched in Sacramento. Something we launched in Sacramento last May, and something that definitely me and my family use quite a bit. There's nothing quite like being hungry and just deciding you're going to have it dropped off at your door instead of having to go out and chase it down, get dressed up or whatever. It's also, and I think, I know a lot of you folks are from all over the state. We have it in, I think, 14 of the largest markets in California. So if you're interested in finding out if it's available to you, I'd be happy to show it to you on the phone, or I can give you guys my information, and I'd be happy to see if it's something you may be interested in. And while it's been a little bit of a controversial topic lately, as a technology company, we're also developing self-driving cars, which, in all seriousness, a big reason why we are doing that is to provide, more mobility and more independence for communities like yours. And so I know it's a crazy concept to a lot of folks, but I was actually just in one last weekend, and it's something that I think we'll be here sooner than you think, and certainly within all your lifetime. So it's definitely exciting stuff. A couple other things is Uber in the last few years changed their policies where every driver, we have over 100,000 of them in California, on a quarterly basis, and once they sign up is given a prompt, and they're made aware, and they have to basically sign on to acknowledging their ADA responsibilities and the responsibilities to pick up riders of all types, including with their service animal. And so if that has ever been an issue to you, I'd be really interested to hear that, but it's something that we take super seriously. If you ever have issues with a driver not wanting your service animal to be in the car with you,
We have a complaint process through which you can make that known, absolutely get a reimbursement, and get, you know, I think treated with the dignity that, that all folks deserve. So that's something that I don't want to dive into too much. I'm sure you folks have your own kind of unique questions and experiences with Uber, but I'm very proud of, I think, the work we are doing on this front. I think nothing makes me happier than somebody tells me that, you know, since Uber's been around, it's only been for a handful of years. I think people sometimes forget that it has changed their lives for the better. And while there may be some, you know, frustrating experiences where a misconnection with the driver, or a driver who doesn't, you know, provide the service you'd like, that, you know, hopefully those things improve over time, and we're able to, you know, improve your life in some small way. So I'll stop there. By the way, my name's Austin Hayworth. I manage California policy for the company, and I live up here in Sacramento, but I'm from Los Angeles, and I work in San Francisco quite a bit. So I kind of been in all corners of the state, and would be very eager to hear what you guys think of Uber, if anything. And again, thanks for having me here.
Austin, I'm going to start. First of all, let's give Austin a hand. And I've got to say, I've had several experiences, but they grow fewer and fewer, of difficulty with my service animal. But I have to say this. Every time I have had an unfortunate experience, Uber has really made it good. They have come through and been sorry and apologized and have refunded my money. And I figure that's all. They're doing what they know to do, and they're making things better, and I'm really appreciative. We take Uber all the time. So let's hear. But Austin, I think people may have a little bit of a challenge knowing how to use the code this weekend. Could you? That's I think an issue that's come up a fair bit. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So basically, in your app, I'd have to look to double check here, but I think the code is CCB 2018.
That's right.
That's correct.
So basically, you enter it through the payments tab of the app. And if anybody needs help, I will certainly come over and help you do so. You click on the three bars in the top left of the app.
Yeah, I can't say, you can't say that.
Oh, sorry, I apologize.
You can't.
You can use your voiceover technology to say please.
Now, apparently, somebody says we go into payment, and then there's a promotions button.
Correct.
Okay, so enter on the promotions button.
If you enter through the promotions button and you enter that code, you should get a prompt saying congratulations, you've received two trips up to $10. At which point, those trips will work for your next two trips through Sunday, and be inclusive of here and basically anywhere in Sacramento. But primarily,
can I ask how many? Would you clap if you were able to use the code successfully? That is wonderful. Would you clap if you weren't able to use it successfully? Well, I'm sorry, we want to talk to those people, but notice the preponderance of people were able to use it successfully.
First of all, I apologize to anybody that's had trouble. I will stop by on my way out of here and make sure that we get that
fixed.
Actually,
would you just raise your hand if you had trouble so you can kind of see where they are, Austin? Do you see the hands?
I see a handful of people at least.
Okay, got it. Well, then you can stop by, or Austin will stop by and chat with you. We got time for a couple of quick questions.
Sheila Gunn Cushman.
Yes, Sheila.
The troubles that I have with Uber, I use Uber and Lyft, honestly, and I have the same issues with both, is, first of all, there are a lot of drivers who really don't speak English. Okay? And my problem is, you're working with an app, you get in a car, and then all of a sudden you're basically a hostage. This person cannot tell you what they're doing, where they're going, whether they're going to pick somebody else up first, who's being dropped off first, where you are, anything. And they don't follow instructions at all. And the excuse I hear most often from English speakers and non-speakers alike is, oh, I'm using my GPS. I just follow my GPS. Well, GPS is never perfect.
Okay. Sheila, is that, I want to give one. Austin time to reply.
That's one. And the other one is air fresheners. I can't breathe them. And I have had Uber drivers tell me that air fresheners are supposed to be there, and I've had Uber drivers tell me, no, we're supposed to make our car as unscented as possible. And I beg you, make it unscented so I can breathe.
Sheila, thank you for that feedback. One, I've had some of the same experiences it seems like you're describing. The one thing I can say is, you know, we care about obviously keeping our drivers at a high quality and for people that are, you know, treating riders with respect. And so what we ask and what we encourage everybody to do is if you have a bad experience is to rate them poorly, because people, I think, underestimate what that actually translates to. If folks get more than a couple ratings of 3 stars or less, they'll get suspended and you'll never get paired with them again. And so there is a little bit of a quality control measure to that, where I mentioned there's well over 100,000 drivers in California. When you have that many folks from different communities doing different things, some of which have only been actually driving for a short period of time, we want to know. We want that feedback. We want to know if somebody is not really up to what is a reasonable standard. And so we definitely encourage you to use that as a tool. And you should always feel the ability to speak up. If you feel like a driver is not listening to you, that's unacceptable. You are contracting with them for them to provide a service, and they are supposed to listen to you. And on your point about air fresheners and scents, I will definitely take that as feedback that I can hand over to my operations team to I think, further emphasize. I haven't heard that one before, but I will take it seriously, just like every other piece of input.
Yeah, Is Jeff around? Is he in your room?
Hi, Austin. Thank you. Yeah. My name is Larice Diamond, and I am so happy to be a frequent Uber rider. That is my mode of transportation. It has come in very handy. I've been able to go places I have never been able to go before, thanks to Uber.
Okay. So I'm going to actually ask you to stay and do that. Can you stay?
My two questions to you.
We're going to have to stop at this point. We don't have time for any further questions. I apologize. Maybe raise your hand and Austin can come over and speak with you. Who is it that has that question?
Larice.
Larice, we'll get to you, okay? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm happy to come around and answer questions, I think, individually here. So sorry for getting cut short here.
Thank you so much, Austin. Thank you so much. Jeff, are you in the room? Jeff,
yes.
Could you come up, please? Do we have Leslie from Vanda in the room? Okay. Oh, I love this part. I'm good. When you get up here, Jeff, just let me know. Are you with me? Are you coming? Okay.
I'm gonna let him sit right here.
Okay. Does he have a mic?
Yeah, there's a mic. Yes. And
Robbie, you're gonna go over next to this gentleman, Jeff, who's
here's our chair.
Jeff, Robbie is here.
Robert, you're here.
Great to meet you.
Great. What is your last name again? Sumner. That's right.
I'm gonna turn the microphone over to Jeff, the chair of our Legislative Governmental Affairs Committee, and he has an award to present.
I'm just sort of getting settled in here. Okay, where is the
mic? You're good.
All right, so with us today is Robert Sumner, who is legislative staff for Assemblymember Evan Lowe. Mr. Lowe had a conflict and was unable to come, but Mr. Sumner is here. And I want to tell you, hopefully, is the plaque up here?
Oh, dear. Uh-oh. Do we not have the plaque? Nicole? Is Nicole in the room? We need the plaque for Assemblyman Lowe.
We have a few minutes to get it.
Yeah, but please bring it.
I'm going to tell you a story about, and it's kind of an unusual story, and you'll see why. As many of you know, we have had a campaign for several years now to repeal the guide dog board because it was felt by the vast majority of guide dog handlers that the board was no longer necessary and in fact was counterproductive to the purposes of ensuring that the state dealt most productively and efficiently with the needs of guide dog handlers. So what happens with these boards, the guide dog board was a board under the Department of Consumer Affairs, and there's dozens of boards under that department. And what happens with these boards is they go through what's called a sunset review. Usually they're like 4 years or 5 years or whatever, which means basically they have to be reauthorized by the legislature every so often. And California, we live in, and I'm a very blue person myself, and I'm proud to be in a blue state. And we, but here's the thing. In a blue state, you seldom see boards go away. In red states, you may, but in blue states, yeah, it doesn't happen very often. So what usually happens with these boards is that they go through reviews, and then they're just continued, they're continued on for another 4 years, and then they go through another review, and there are changes made. People bring up objections, and changes do occur, but seldom do you see a board abolished. So the guide dog board was up for its review and would have been abolished under the law on January 1, 2018. And a bill, just like the normal course of bills, was put into the legislative hopper to continue the board for a few years. And the community got together, all the consumer organizations, guide dog schools and others, and said, hey, you know, we prefer the guide dog board go away. And they actually decided to shorten the term for which the guide dog board was going to be retained. But still, the board was going to stay in existence. And then the chair of the committee changed to Mr. Lowe. And we went in and we talked to Mr. Lowe and the assistant to the Business and Professions Committee. And in something that, and I've worked around the legislature for, well, considering the time I was actually there and the time I've done lobbying since, it's been closer to, well over 35 years. And I can't remember a time when I've actually seen a bill completely reversed. But this was one of those rare occurrences where the author heard the community and he realized that other than the board, maybe one or two, you know, aberrant individuals, nobody wanted the board, even that dog. Maybe he did want the board, I don't know. But everybody in the community wanted the board abolished. And he basically said, okay, we're going to reverse the bill and we're going to let the board go away. And that was really a step that, even though it was in the grand scheme of things, a small small bill in terms of, you know, cost, in terms of the affected community, it took some guts on his part to basically reverse course, to understand what we wanted, and to say, okay, if this, and to fight for it. And you know, we ended up having a press release, and we ended up, you know, basically getting the case out there why the board wasn't necessary, and the bill sailed through, and it added some consumer protections. Now that the board has gone, it added some consumer protections for folks attending guide dog schools, and so now we have the system that we really hope to have. And if it wasn't for Mr. Lowe's leadership and willingness to listen and to do what he knew was the appropriate thing for the community, it would not have happened. And for that reason, as well as some of the other areas in which his leadership has been shown, we are awarding Mr. Lowe our Legislator of the Year Award. So, yes, so we have the plaque, and I'm going to give it to, actually, I have Nicole. You want to come up and read it?
But why don't we ask Robbie to read it?
You want to read it? Okay, yeah. Why don't you read it?
Robbie, you read it.
Yes, he is going to, I'm going to give him a mic here.
Sure thing. So, on behalf of Assembly Member Evan Lowe, Chair of the Business and Professions Committee, I'm happy to accept this plaque. On behalf of the California Council of the Blind, the Legislator of the Year Award, which was presented to Evan Lowe this 24th day of March, 2018, for his leadership in such diverse areas as elections, civil rights, business and drug abuse, and for his hard work and willingness to work collaboratively with the blindness community concerning guide dog related issues through by sponsoring AB 1705.
Yes.
Oh, and I'm going to, you know, another thing that I forgot to mention, Mr. Lowe has also been in the elections area, a strong supporter of accessibility in terms of our right to vote privately and independently, and he has done great work in that area as well, so let's hear it for that.
Wonderful. What's his district?
You want to know
that? Yeah, sure. Assembly Member Lowe represents the 28th Assembly District, and that includes the San Jose area, Saratoga, Campbell, Cupertino, Los Gatos.
Thank you so much. Yes! Okay. You know, we're running quite a bit ahead of schedule. I guess nobody wants a door prize.
I do. Hope I didn't miss anyone here.
Door prize. Nicole, we have door prizes, right?
Yes.
And we have a bowl with names in it. My name is in there. Let's give the cash last. So we have Mary Beth Sense.
World of
Sense. She's here exhibiting, ooh. Right?
Yes.
Hey,
yeah, and it's a nice gift bag here. A little, it's supposedly worth $75. So, Jeff, why don't you draw a name?
Okay.
I can smell it. It smells like strawberry or something.
Yeah. Okay, I got one. That's what we need.
We need one now. Joseph Rodriguez. Is Joseph in the room? Nope. Pull another one, Jeff.
Guess he's not going to smell as sweet as he needs to.
No.
All right, there you go.
Anita Vanderlinden? Anita Vanderlinden? Is she here? She is.
Right.
Wonderful. Will you take this, sir? Anita, I hope I didn't just smash your name. Is it Vanderlinden? Oh, good. Good. Where are you from, Anita? Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. Is Nicole back? You're back? I'm going to pick another name. I'm going to pick another one. Mine is in here. Next, we've got the mug, the T-shirt. This is from Bakersfield Chapter. It's the gift card from Starbucks, right? And they're Dining in the Dark T-shirt. They're the granddaddy chapter for doing Dining in the Dark. And basically, Bakersfield sort of gave us the idea. So whose name do we have here? Tony Ames. Is she here? She's manning the dog booth, right? I'm sorry that she... No, you have to be in the room. You have to be in the room. Okay, so I've got another one here. Ed Crespin. Ed Crespin. Is Ed here? gosh, Ed. Oh, well, we should take... Okay. Amy Welsh? Come on. Keep it out for a minute. Don't. Yeah, well, we're all here, aren't we? Jamie Gibson.
She can wear the Bakersfield t-shirt with a praise note. I think.
Okay. It's actually, is it Gibson Barrows, Jamie? I'm sorry, I left off half your name, but I knew who you were. Okay, we're ready now for $25 in cash. Nobody wants that, so I'll just take it. I won't draw anything.
What?
It's Mike Martin.
I'm sorry, what?
It's Mike
Martin. Hey, Mike. Sorry, I missed your talk. I was up with Eric Bridges and Josie.
Lisa Pareto. So.
I heard we came out okay.
Yeah. No, it's I'm not. I thought about that.
Did you hear we got a lot of real positive feedback this week?
Okay.
All sorts of folks.
Connie Bateman. Connie! What? Is Connie in the room?
Yeah.
Is she here?
No.
Connie! Wait till she hears.
That's okay. Give me a call at some point and we'll talk about it. But it was really impressive.
Diane Harms. Diane. People are going to be so bad.
Great. Okay. That's what we want. Probably a Senate budget, maybe. Could have been Senate.
Oh. Okay.
They said they were going to do that for me.
I'm not going to say anything. She's not here.
Get it on the radar. That's what we want.
John Glass. John Glass is a member of our streaming team. I'm going to let him have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
Hey, you know where my wife is?
Okay, bring me another $25, no. Nicole.
You know?
Yeah. For Austin Hayworth, is Austin still in the room?
You can slip out.
Lewis, what is he? We have his email address.
Hayworth, Heyworth at uber.com.
It's just his last name?
Last name.
Okay, Hayworth, Heyworth at what? His email address is Hayworth. Yes, his email address, as I'm telling you, is
listen up.
Hayworth at uber.com, right? At uber.com. Heyworth at uber.com. He's not getting a prize. Nicole, since I arbitrarily gave away one after saying people had to be in the room, I'm going to... Hey, the chair knows when she's been overruled. You got another $25? And by the way, who was that $25 before that we didn't acknowledge the chapter?
It was Fresno chapter.
Fresno again. Fresno generously has given several. And who's this $25 from? ACB Capital chapter. All right, Jeff, you draw till we find somebody. After all, a member of the Capital chapter could draw for... Deborah Thompson. Is Deborah here?
Too bad.
Too bad.
I tried.
Oh, go ahead. We keep getting Diane Harms. Is she here yet?
Twice. That's pretty good.
Jenny Simonovich.
Sounds like a player for the
Somebody, Simonovic, Jenny Simonovic?
I like the name.
Is that Carly crying? Okay. The first dog is not crying. Diane Deutsch!
Yay.
Is Diane here? Woohoo! Great, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, it's 3:56. I declare the first general session of the CCB 2018 Conference and Convention in recess.